Before we start today's episode, I would just like to make an announcement that we will be releasing a special extra episode on the 14th of February as part of our 2-year anniversary celebration. Enjoy! Hi, welcome to Neuroverse, a podcast hosted by Carolina
and Clara, where we discuss all matters from neuroscience to philosophy and beyond.
Hi, welcome to today's episode. Today we're answering a few of your Q&As to celebrate our 2-year Neuroverse anniversary.
Woo!
Yes!
Exciting. We've made it through 2 years of lots of growth. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited to answer the questions that you have for us today.
Yeah, me too. And I'm excited and very happy with all of the episodes that we've done in the 2 years and looking forward to many more.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's just dive right in with some of the questions. So the first one says, "Hi, I'm a recent postgraduate in cell and molecular biology with a background in neuroscience. Can you talk about writing articles as a student or an individual on how to go about it and what to look out for?"
So I think with this question, it depends on what your goal is. So I think as a student or as an academic, your goal is to publish in journals, in which case I think it depends on the kind of research you're doing, and it will probably be something you'd have to reach out to your professor about and talk to your supervisor about what kind of paper you want to publish, whether it's like primary research or whether it's like a review article. And that's more on the academic side. But then as an individual, I guess you have more freedom. So yeah, not only you can publish to academic journals, but also other like magazines. And there are competitions out there and things like that that you can join in. So I think just think about your audience, think about the kind of research you've done and that you'd like to put out there, and reach out to people who have published the kind of work you want to publish to figure out how they did it and then how to go about it.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I'm quite passionate about writing. I used to like write for science journals in my undergrad and my master's. And so like I would highly recommend that to anyone who is interested in writing, because I gained so many skills. Like, I really learned how to, so that type of writing, as you mentioned, it's really important to understand who your audience is and what the style is. And for that, I was like writing for a more lay audience. And I really learned a lot about how to make my writing more concise and simple, and just like little tricks to make it as clear as possible, because that is like something that is way harder than you would expect, because in uni, I guess, we mainly write articles for a scientific audience. And yeah, when it comes to writing papers, of course, that's completely different. So I agree that the number one thing is know your audience, but also always make it more basic than you think it should be.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And get as much experience as you can get, because you will improve greatly over time.
Yeah, definitely. And then the second part of this question, they ask how to go about approaching PIs or professors for collaborations. Honestly, I think the world is way friendlier than we think it is. And I think that just reaching out with an email, being polite, being well-informed, so like read the papers they've written before you reach out to them.
Definitely.
It's crazy to me that that some people don't. It's very important. It shows like a lot of consideration for their time. And yeah, I guess just be polite. And if you have the opportunity to bump into them at a conference or anything like that, I would say don't be shy, like go up to them. They really appreciate when people come up to them and compliment their research. So yeah, I think most professors and PIs are very open to collaborating. Like, for example, TACT, who's a science art duo, they do a lot of collaborations with scientists, and they're in the art field. So even if you're not in science, I think don't be afraid to reach out to scientists.
Yeah, it definitely depends on the person. So don't be surprised if you get a variety of responses, and some people just aren't keen to collaborate or take students, and other people really are. So just definitely go for it. But yeah, I agree. Like, you should definitely read about what the research has been on, and also not fixate on one thing. Like, if you're really interested in one paper by them, don't just like assume that that's all they do. Mm-hmm. As long as you're polite and enthusiastic, it usually ends up with a good response. So our second question is it possible to gain experience in neuroscience not for a long-term career, but rather to get a taste of the field coming from a non-parallel background? I think that's a really interesting question, because mm-hmm. I know there's a lot of interest in neuroscience, especially nowadays, and like how to integrate it in your daily life or other fields. I guess it depends on what stage you're at, because what type of experience do you want? Like, is it just to learn more about, to gain neuroscience knowledge, or is it like to gain lab experience and to understand what neuroscience methodology is like? Because neuroscience in itself is such a vast field, and there's like molecular neuroscience and circuits, like computational neuroscience. And so that in itself is a huge advantage that makes it able to be intercalated with other fields. Like a lot of people who come from a computer science background or an engineering background can go into AI research that is related to neuroscience. And then if you come from like a protein biology background, you can also enter a neuroscience field through that. So it's definitely possible, but it just depends what you're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. To that, I would add on, as I mentioned in my last question, like, you can collaborate, like, neuroscientists do collaborate with people in different fields, like artists, but also like collaborators are a bit closer to home, such as like physicists or other biologists. But also, I mean, there's a lot of, not only in the academic world, but there's also industry, and there's also startups and like pharma companies and or like robotics companies and things like that. So even if it's not on the academic route, I think that if you wanted to do an internship or work for a year or two in another, in a neuroscience company, you could. And I think that, me personally, I think that the world benefits from interdisciplinary mostly. And so I think if you come from a different field, you could definitely add a lot to the field of neuroscience. And I think that there are career opportunities out there for that.
Yeah.
I think I would also just add, like, we often are our own limitations. So no matter how parallel or non-parallel your background is, if you have an idea and if you think it fits in with neuroscience, I guess reach out and find someone that you think you can communicate your idea with, and then see if you can engage enthusiasm and then go from there.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess you won't know if you don't ask. So I would say try it.
Yeah. And like I said, some people are a lot more enthusiastic than others, but there are definitely people out there that are like passionate about also sharing neuroscience with the world and getting a more diverse range of people to take a part in the neuroscience world. And so if you like reach out to as many people as possible, then you're sure to find somebody who like can take you under their wing and teach you all about it.
Yeah, definitely. So for our third question, if you weren't doing a PhD in neuroscience, what else would you be doing?
I like this question.
I love this question, yeah.
We've spoken about it a bit in previous episodes, because obviously it influences what episode topics we choose also.
Mm-hmm.
But go ahead.
I could talk about this for hours. I think like there are so many other career paths I have in mind, but Well, I'll first start off by saying that I think one of the reasons I picked neuroscience was because it's the one field that I feel like I can encompass my other interests and other fields into. So, like, for example, I have a great love for biochemistry and like enzyme-directed evolution. So maybe in another life, I would be working with enzymes, doing God knows what, maybe cool plastic-eating fungi or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I also am really passionate about research into women's health. So I've also liked to maybe work in a lab that was contributing to bridging the gap in research. I also love to dance. I used to do ballet for many years, so maybe I would have gotten into that. And I love literature, so maybe I would have been like a librarian or something.
Or a writer.
Or a writer, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I like the diversity there. And I'm actually surprisingly similar, because I would say I also entered neuroscience as a way to like encapsulate all my different interests, because I like science, but I also like anthropology, which is the thing that got me into neuroscience in the first place. Like, I always wanted to study anthropology and indigenous peoples, and which would also be like such interesting research to travel around to like really unique communities that have different lifestyles from us. So something related to that, if we're sticking to research, or as I've also spoken about on Neuroverse, I love biomaterials and like material science. I find so fascinating, and I would have loved to go into like engineering biomaterials, like bioengineering, and because it incorporates like my love for nature and science. And then if we're not sticking to science, like I would have loved to be a dancer as well, because I also did ballet and I love contemporary dance. Or I absolutely love baking and I would totally be a baker, which is not that different from science, actually. It's very similar to being in the lab. Yeah, or like something outdoorsy, because I just love being outdoors, and I just like anything that would let me hike all day or like be in a garden all day or something like that, I would have loved, which is definitely very different from my life right now. Yeah. So, yeah, I think those are my other options.
I can definitely see you opening your own bakery one day.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely going to happen.
And there will be, like, neuron-shaped or something. Like, yeah. The morphology will be the neuron.
My whole life will come together in the form of a bakery at some point.
Yeah.
Okay, so for our next question, we have, hi, I'm an undergraduate first-year student in human neuroscience. Can you suggest some work experience ideas in this field? And what can I do to enhance my CV in relation to neuroscience? So, first of all, we're both a little bit biased because we're both in research, which is like the academia portion of all the potential career paths you could take within neuroscience. So other than reaching out to lots of PIs to try to get some lab experience, which I still think is worth it even if you're not thinking of going into academia, just to see what it's like in a lab, because labs can be so varied and like it's just interesting to see all the things that all the different techniques that you can get involved in and everything like that. But other than that, I mean, there's also like the whole, there's industries that you could find some startups, like you, like Carolina mentioned. There's a lot more neuroscience related startups popping up to do with machine learning, kind of computational computer science things, or
brain machine interfaces.
Yeah, brain machine interfaces.
And I guess drug discovery.
Yeah.
But like related to like neuropathology.
More like clinical options. So getting experience in a hospital, even if you want to go more in the biomedical direction or in a drug company. But there's also like neuromarketing, and how that's more to do with psychology, I guess, but that's also a huge field, like policy making and marketing based on neuroscience. So I hope that's some work experience ideas for you.
Yeah. And I would also say there's a lot of volunteer work that you could do. Like, I volunteered at a care home and I think that was a really good experience. And you often talk about like from the bench to the bedside, or from bedside to the bench. And I think that gives you like a well-rounded perspective. I would say, I think not only for the CV, but for yourself as well personally, it's good to have a wide range of experience, and then you can really figure out what you like and what you don't like. Because if you just try one type of work field, then you don't find out if there's anything else you would have preferred or not preferred.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point, volunteering. I also volunteered in a rehabilitation center for dementia patients, and I volunteered also for with special needs kids. And so like that gave me a perspective of neurodegeneration and neurodevelopmental disorders, that is very much more of like a real world encounter. And so it shows that doing something like that would show that you're informed about the purpose of the research and the implications that neuroscience has on the world. So volunteering experiences, as well as lab experiences, as well as like leadership roles in societies, trying to get involved, are really good. And obviously, as like podcast hosts also, I think it's really good to have some science communication experience, whether that's writing articles or public speaking or any sort of societies or campaigns, or going to festivals, sharing science with kids or other adults. Like, all those are really good for your CV and really highly valued skills no matter where you end up.
Yeah. So for the next one, we have, how does doing a PhD differ from working as a research technician or a research assistant? I think as a research technician or assistant, like, you're hired to do a job, and it's very much laid out, like the instructions and what you're going to do on the day to day. I think the key difference with a PhD is you are in charge of your own project and leading what direction it takes, and validating everything that you do. I think that's really important. Like, no one is going to like double check for you. Whereas as a research technician, I think you're more like limited to like the specific task that you're doing, and you don't need to take as much of a lead in the project as you would have with a PhD. So I think there's a lot more independence and creativity that comes with a PhD. But I think that working as a research assistant, for me personally, it was really great because it made me feel more confident in my lab skills. And it also was a good way to have more exposure into how to think about science. And that extra year that I took between my master's and my PhD, I think it helped me learn how to think about science a bit more.
Yeah, I don't have experience working as a research technician because I went straight from my master's to my PhD. But definitely I've noticed that a PhD, you just have so much independence. And even though you're obviously still under supervision, like you said, it's very much your responsibility. Like, yeah. You get the opportunity to have more say in the direction of your project, and you are eventually going to become like the expert of this project. So it's definitely like the challenge of it is that it is all your responsibility. Like you said, no one is going to check anything for you or like do anything for you. So it's really up to you, and it's a really good challenge. And I think that's the main difference, that you just have a lot more like say in the direction mm-hmm. of how things go. Okay, the next question we have is, how does studying neuroscience affect your day-to-day or outlook of the world?
Interesting.
I really love this question because it definitely has affected so much my perspective on the world. And as I've spoken about on Neuroverse before, like, I mean, it just has helped to form my worldview, so to speak, in that I've become much more aware of, as I've continuously questioned perception and how we perceive reality, I've become continuously more aware of like how distorted our perception can be, and how our like internal state and emotional state and memories affect our perception of everything that happens to us. And in terms of day to day, I think, I've also like just doing science has made me a lot more like of a scientist, I guess. I'm not naturally super logical, or like I don't tend to form hypotheses on like everyday situations, but I find myself doing it more and more. Like, we were having a conversation right before this episode. I already realized I used phrases like, it's highly possible, not probable.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Stuff that I would not say if I wasn't working as a scientist, you know? Like, yeah. I do feel like I'm a bit more empirical in my approach to everything. Yeah. Whether that's good or bad, I don't know.
Interesting, yeah. I found myself also doing that, sometimes using, like, a bit, I guess, more neuroscience-y terminology.
Terms, yeah.
Like, I think earlier I said something along the lines of, like certain sides of myself get expressed more.
like gene expression. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, and also just obviously making comparisons with things I see, like I'm looking right now out at this tree that I can't help looking at because I just keep seeing it as a neuron, which mm-hmm. I see all the time, comparing things to like synapses or mm-hmm. neurons or yeah just everything.
Yeah,
it really definitely affects my day to day because I'm constantly thinking about neuroscience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it also affects my day to day. I think it's made me become even more aware of how subjective we are.
Yeah.
And how we all live in our own bubble. And it's made me very aware that, like, when someone is saying something and speaking in a certain way, I know exactly, like, where they're coming from and how it differs to, like, my perspective of the world. And I think it's made me more compassionate and understanding.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah. Even if I don't agree with what they're saying, it's given me that awareness of, like, why we are the way we are in certain ways.
Mm-hmm.
What else? I will tell you something it has not helped. it has not helped with my decision-making. I still massively struggle with that. It's one of the things I think I struggle with the most.
But, like, has it made it worse, or...?
I don't think it's... Well, maybe, but no. I don't think it's made it worse. I think I've gotten worse at it somehow, just in general. But I worked on... When I was working with Sonja Hoffer and I was working on the IBL project, it was a decision-making project.
Mm-hmm.
And I went into it thinking, great, oh my God, I'm solve
gonna
it.
I'm going to know how to make decisions now.
Exactly. Yeah. But I guess this just goes to show it's kind of like the red room thing. Like just because you know the neuroscience or some of the neuroscience of it doesn't mean you have the qualia or, you know, the phenomenological experience of then being able to make a decision. Like, yeah. I may know what the circuitry is.
But that doesn't help me whatsoever.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I like the analogy. Uh-huh. And maybe it's not great to study, to go into memory research, because you're just going to get worse.
yeah, exactly. I would say, I think I agree with you in the sense that I think it has also, I'm a very sensitive and creative person, and I think neuroscience has helped me be a bit more logical about things as well. And I guess being able to, like, formulate arguments mm-hmm. in a structured way, and I guess be clearer about what I'm feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess just because I'm so used to reading papers and thinking about the logic that then it seeps into other aspects of my life.
Yeah.
And I do things in a structured way.
Yeah, I think it's kind of brought out, like, this analytical, logical side of me that mm-hmm. was probably there before. Yeah. But it got expressed. It got expressed. Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, it's weird because I've also at the same time, I've begun to overthink things a bit more.
Mm.
But then I feel like I go through phases of, like, when I overthink things because of neuroscience, like, oh my gosh, is reality real? And then I like mm-hmm. just stop because I'm like, oh, this is a good point. Yeah, this is actually a main way it has affected me. I've become like an absurdist.
Absurdist?
Yeah.
Oh,
through studying neuroscience, because I just like, it's like the more you know, the more you know you don't know.
Exactly.
And I've obviously given a lot of thought to, like, research approaches, and especially working with animals is, like, really challenging for me, and I've spent so much time thinking about it, and to the point where I, like, question everything, mm-hmm. and so I start to question what is the point of anything, and, like, is it even worth having more knowledge?
Mm.
So I get into, like, these existential crises where I just start to, yeah, like, see the world as an... Like, everything in the world is absurd.
Like, I feel that so much. I have a similar experience in that I think, yeah, sometimes the more we know, the more we don't know. And then I get to a point where I just feel like, what's the point? What's
exactly,
the point?
Exactly, exactly. Yeah.
But then I do come back to it in the sense of, like, no, like, it is intrinsically interesting. Mm-hmm. And I guess, like, the answer isn't, like, it's about the journey, not the destination, right?
Yeah.
But also, I think it has also... In encountered what I said previously, it has also allowed me to be a bit more creative, because because there's so much unknown, it allows me to be more open-minded again about reality and why things happen the way they happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, like open-minded because it's, you can see like all the possible explanations for things, which is another point. Like also, I think I'd like to believe also that I think more deeply about things in the sense of like, I have to think of all the controls, like yes. What am I missing out? Like, but if I show this, what does it really show?
Yeah.
And like you read more papers and you're like, what does that really show? Especially with, for me, like circuits behavior stuff, like, okay, activity in the brain correlated with behavior. What does that really show?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess, yeah, it comes back to,
I sometimes try to like have controls in my own life, like like with like diet or something, and I'm like, let me find out what is the,
oh my gosh, yes, it was like when my heating was broken and I like systematically turn off every switch, but then I was like, but like what is the optimal controls, because like I need to figure out which is doing which.
Exactly. But with life it's like, it's so impossible, like there's so many types variables. Of controls. Yeah, exactly, there's so many variables, you can't run a control in your life. It's annoying.
Yeah. So yeah, that was a really fun question to answer.
That was. So just to finish up today, so this is going to be the last question. What advice do you have in terms of picking a lab or PhD program? I think this is a really important question because, as we know, and as I've been told, PhDs last longer than most marriages. So,
oh my gosh, I've never heard that before.
Have you not? No. I've heard this a lot.
Wow. Okay.
Almost in every introductory PhD talk.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. I'm kind of glad I haven't heard that before, but yeah. Now I know.
Yeah, exactly. So it is important picking like a good lab.
Yeah.
I think that with European PhD programs, it's challenging because usually you just get hired as like an employee, which I think has its advantages because you do get treated like an employee, which has a lot of benefits, like you get better paid, yeah, you can manage your own workload better, etc. But so for those, I would say really like spend a lot of as much time as you can getting to know the PI. It's difficult to gather who they are as a person from like a 30-minute interview. So
definitely, even like a few months, sometimes you still don't realize everything about what the person is like as a PhD supervisor, because it's also important to bear in mind that like supervisors treat different levels of people differently.
Yeah.
And so if you've had an experience as an undergrad, it might not be the same as a PhD.
And I think the best advice would be to talk to as many people as you can, like talk
from the lab.
Yeah, yeah, from the lab, and also like from outside the lab.
Yeah,
like you know, ex-students. Yeah, yeah. In the UK, it's a bit easier, I think, because you tend to do rotations in your programs in the UK, which is good to get a feel for the PI.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm on a program where I did rotations. And I would highly recommend that. So, like, it would definitely be something I would prioritize in looking for a program, because not only does it give you the opportunity to really, like, vibe out the labs, but I got so many experiences I wouldn't have gotten if I had just dove straight into a PhD. And I'm so grateful for them because it really helped to change my perspective on what I want to do and how it can fit into the real world applications of the research. And like, I mean, essentially I ended up doing what I initially thought I wanted to do, but it helped to confirm that. And at the same time, I just have a much broader perspective now, which I'm really grateful for. So programs that have rotation year are really good. They also tend to be quite like well managed because you're in a cohort and there are cohorts above you with people you can talk to. I'd reach out to people in specific programs that you're interested in to ask them what their experiences were like, and even like maybe speak to the program coordinators.
Yeah, but additionally, for those programs that don't have a rotation, I would say this is where like having work experience really helps. Like work a couple summers in two or three different labs, work as a year or 2 years as a research assistant and try out different labs. Like you can kind of do your own rotations if you want to, like you can try out different labs before you start doing a PhD, and lots of people do that. So if you're in a situation like that, I would say do that, and then if you like the PI, apply for a PhD program with them, for example.
Yeah, Mm-hmm. I'd say the two most important factors are, number one, your lab environment, which includes your supervisor and your relationship with them, and number two, what your project is about. And you need to like your project, because if you don't have that, you have nothing, essentially. Mm-hmm. Like, if any time I'm like struggling on the day-to-day with any, you know, like the techniques or just self-esteem or like mm-hmm. anything, I just remind myself I'm doing a project that I love and I'm interested in this, and I can't, and then it makes me excited again. I can't wait to find out the answers to these questions I have.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course the lab environment, like you need that to keep, you need a support system to keep you going no matter what.
Yeah.
And like from a personal point of view, I in general make all my decisions extremely intuitively. So I can't really like explain what guides my decisions necessarily, but that's like how I made my decision for my lab I chose. It's like I see intuition as a more all-encompassing thing, because it's not like I was just focusing on one aspect of my experience. It was like a combination of factors to do with my project and supervisor and lab environment and everything, so mm-hmm. and work-life balance, work balance and everything.
yeah I haven't made a decision yet because I'm still in my rotation year, but yeah, I think, well, yeah, I agree completely. It's primarily the supervisor and the project, and yeah, the day-to-day stuff matters a lot as well, so having this experience also helps you figure out if you like the day-to-day. And yeah, just thinking about the bigger question when things get tough.
Yeah. In neuroscience, it's like if you're working with animals, it's something really important to consider. Like, are you comfortable with working with mice or
zebrafish
or Drosophila or stem cells? Are you like, are your morals in line with that enough to let you do the work? And do you enjoy it? And like, do you enjoy the molecular level, or do you enjoy the circuit level, or what else? And also like, what skills do you want to gain from a PhD is really important to keep in mind, because there's so many different skills you could possibly gain. And if you want to do more like analysis things, and you want to go in more clinical direction, like maybe choose a project that does human research with a large large scale data from a large cohort, and then you can go more into the bioinformatics side of things. So there's definitely like options out there for everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely consider that, like, what do you want to come out of your PhD gaining, and how can that maybe help whatever you want to do in the future, even if you're not sure what you want to do in the future.
Mm-hmm. I would just like to add that I think that in not only in terms of like practical skills like lab work or analysis, one of the most important things I think about the PhD is learning how to think and how to be creative and mm-hmm. how to come up with questions. So yeah, if you're thinking about doing a PhD, keep in mind it's not just the practical stuff, it's the larger scale stuff as well, and like the abstract stuff. And I think that's one of the main benefits about doing a PhD.
Yeah. And the skills like organization, independent thinking and independent organization are kind of the foundation of your PhD that you'll gain. So, and problem solving, a lot of problem solving. So on that note, we will end today's episode. Thank you everyone who submitted questions. Hopefully we'll do more Q&As in the future, because they're quite fun.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you for listening today.
Yeah, thank you so much for listening. Thank you for joining us on this journey, and tuning into all of our future episodes.
Yeah, happy 2 years to Neuroverse.
Yes, happy 2 years.